Tsunami Gaff. Wasting every Saturday night together. Only Tsunami.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
It's going good.
It exists.
B-Dubs, how are you?
I'm all right.
C-Kohler, how are you?
Pretty good.
Crocodile, how are you?
Crocodile is
well
having...
enough, I suppose.
Oh, there he is. Okay, oh. Having connection problems.
It's going to be Zonic all over again.
I still contend that was our best episode.
Yes, our best episode because everything was wrong. Anyway, this is episode 50 of the Tsunami Gaff Podcast. How's it going? So, for in terms of news, we just have a rumor, I guess, that there looks to be a bunch of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure stuff at Anime Boston, and they might announce a dub premiere for Stardust Crusaders there.
And Crunchyroll just announced they got G Gundam.
Yep.
We're still waiting on news for the dub, though.
Why would them having...
Is that the upscale version of this?
I'm trying to figure it out. It might be.
Why would the JoJo thing be a Toonami thing?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Like, has Toonami ever announced stuff at that con?
Well, it might not be that them announcing it. It might be the con announcing it there. Because, like, Toonami hasn't all... Like, they've announced stuff at... Oh, Crocodile dropped out.
No,
there
he's
is.
Good, he's good.
Anyway.
I mean, they might just announce that the dub is coming and that they're going to put it out, and then later on, Toonami will get around to announcing it themselves. But there is a lot of JoJo stuff there for... You know, so presumably there's going to be some kind of big JoJo announcement.
Remember when Sentai rolled up a bus with Parasite on it?
Yes.
Peppered Farm remembers.
Yes, it does.
So what event are these JoJo panels happening at?
Anime Boston.
And when is that?
I thought it was this weekend.
I mean, I didn't really get the details. I'm sorry.
I know that Joseph Joestar's voice actor in Stardust Crusaders, I think it's Richard Ekpar, posted a tweet, I think, a week or two back of him basically recording for the JoJo's dub. So I think it's clear progress has been made since that test dub, however many months, or has been probably a year or two at this point. So we probably will see some dub footage from that event. I'm not sure if they're going to ready Stardust Crusaders part three announcement at Toonami just yet. Because I would say, Battle Tendency ends in May, right?
Counting this upcoming episode, it has
only
4 episodes left, so it'll end in late April.
Okay. I'm curious to see. I guess we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
I did not know that part 3 wasn't dubbed. So it could be like a dub premiere on Toonami, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Cool.
Like, if they've decided that they're not going to take a breather show, maybe because they're really happy with the ratings or because their plans got thrown into disarray because of the One Piece leaving and Tokyo Ghoul having to drop in there suddenly. Like, maybe Tokyo Ghoul was what they were thinking of slotting in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel like, oh, they've got to put something in between the JoJo seasons. Doesn't seem like that has to happen now.
Right. Like, they may have dramatically changed. It's like, well, its ratings are doing perfectly fine enough. Let's just go straight in.
Yeah.
And then, you know...
It could also be we're about to, after Jack, we're going to lose the 11 o'clock slot, and they might want to get Attack on Titan Season 2 in there.
I kind of thought they might just put it... If anything could keep the 11 o'clock slot, Attack on Titan Season 2 would be it.
That's what he just said.
Oh, well.
Is it Funimation simul dubbing Attack on Titan Season 2 or for their streaming services? I think that's what I heard. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
They are.
So we're not going to get it too quickly on Toonami then.
I mean, Samurai Jack wouldn't end until late May, so 2 months after the show starts wouldn't be a crazy idea.
I mean, it'd mostly be over at that point. No.
Well, it's going to be 25 episodes-ish, I assume.
See, I thought it would be about 12.
I mean, it's Attack on Titan.
Yeah, good point. It does take them forever to get anywhere.
There was one other piece of news.
Is better paced, though.
Ankar, could you repeat that?
He hopes this season is better paced.
I mean, season 5 episodes to move to Boulder and other nonsense like that.
It's not better.
You gotta believe, man.
believe that they just made it to the basement.
They did make it to the basement, didn't they? In the manga?
Yeah, like 3 chapters ago.
Well, no, that was several chapters ago. And apparently people are kind of like, oh, it actually was kind of worth it. I mean, it's not nearly as bad as it could have been.
No, it could have easily have been worse.
But I've also seen some voice actors coming out and being like, yes, I'm in the season 2 dub for Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. And I'm thinking, they probably, you know, were always going to air the second season no matter what, so.
Yeah, I think that's likely.
I heard the second season is actually better and kind of like has some twists and turns to it, so I wouldn't mind watching the second season. I guess having watched Unicorn, my appreciation for Iron-Blooded Orphans has risen watching season 2.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm more excited for IBO season 2 than I used to be.
I haven't been watching it, so I don't know what's going on, but I'm hoping it's better.
I've just heard people saying, like, oh my god, I can't believe but overall, impressions seem relatively positive.
Like, I've been reading the spoilers because I don't really care. And it does kind of feel like it's kind of crazy.
Cool. There was one other thing I guess we can talk about briefly. It's not so much news, but something that happened was they aired a Moltar video game review for Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, yeah.
That was out of the blue. I remember seeing that back in the day.
I guess that's just sort of them like, hey, this is our 20th or whatever anniversary month, and so we're just sort of throwing in these old things.
I bet we're going to get some from every era.
That'd be
cool.
So
the classic bumps and stuff last throughout. When do they stop? Like, they change in April when April starts, or?
They originally said it was going to be throughout the entire month of March, but then I guess stuff inevitably got delayed, and I guess it's going to be like 4 to 5 weeks total.
Okay. They didn't start till, like, obviously halfway point of March, because that's when Toonami actually first premiered. So I was wondering if it's just going to be like half of March into half of April, or which seems to be what you're saying, so I was just curious how long that was going to go.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Anyway, I'm excited for what's coming.
I also mentioned that I was trying to say earlier that Boruto is starting next month, so I would not be surprised if that showed up on Toonami at some point, you know, in the near future, probably in replacement of Shippuden.
Yeah, we talked at great length about that last episode, and I'm certainly the one who keeps saying I would love for them to ditch Shippuden in favor of Boruto. I don't think it'll happen, but I wish it would.
I mean, maybe the next time it comes time to renew the Shippuden deal, they're like, you know?
Yeah.
We can put Hunter Hunter down there at the bottom.
I'd stay up for it.
Yeah.
As long as they actually get through this next arc in Shippuden, I'm perfectly fine with them just ditching right after.
How long is the pain arc?
40-ish episodes?
It'll take about a year.
Okay. So the rest of the year, okay. Oh, maybe a little more because of holidays and marathons.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a rather longish canon arc, so.
But it should be done by next summer, I think.
Hey, by that time, Dragon Ball Z Kai is going to be done.
Oh, man, I forgot.
Wow.
Hell, that could be a Boruto. Just like, hey, here's Boruto.
I mean, I think they'd like to have an extra slot that they can do stuff with, you know?
I mean, if they had also dropped Shippuden at the same time, then...
Yeah, I think the dropping Shippuden is the least likely thing to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I want it to die!
Probably not going to happen.
I want it to die.
You and everyone else.
Speaking of... you know what? Whatever.
You know, wait, hold on. You had a really good opportunity for a transition there, and you should have said, speaking of people dying, Samurai Jack.
I mean, that's pretty simple, but okay. Samurai Jack. Watch out. Jack. Samurai Jack episode 55, which I guess is 94.
Yes.
In this episode, Jack just kind of goes, fuck it.
Yeah, he just straight up like, I mean, he killed that one chick with a punch. He literally just threw one off a cliff.
Fuck you, fuck your sister, fuck your other sister, fuck this other sister.
I appreciate some of the criticisms that say that the transition might have been a little quick, but it's such a refresher compared to, like, most other, like, action or shonen series where they, like, oh my god, Killian's so wrong, like 20 episodes later, you know, fuck it, just man has a job to do, and he gets it done.
Like, shut the fuck up, Menager!
I think some of that criticism could be allayed a little bit with the little monologuing from Jack, had they put it in there. You know, with him sort of explaining that, he remembered this thing his father did, and he's like, okay, this is something that, you know, we as people have to deal with, and, you know...
I mean, I think flashback to his father and what happened there was probably sufficient. Something I've always appreciated about Jack is the relative lack of dialogue. Because there's a level where it's, like, too little, sometimes too much for a series in general, but I think most series err on the side of too much, so I think I appreciate what Jack does, and I think the flashback of what happened with his father...
I think it made it work.
The transition well enough. I think probably the biggest stretch or the biggest suspension of disbelief issue might be the fact that we're supposed to believe that Jack hasn't killed a human in the past 50-something years he's been doing this. Now, I understand they did that in a previous show because of, you know, censors and the ratings and whatnot, and so it's kind of interesting that they're playing into it rather than hand-waving it, but it's still kind of like, come on, son.
Well, I can give it a pass because this kind of falls into the cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a little like, you know.
Yeah. Weird. It'd be more likely that he had by accident or something, or even deliberately. I agree. I also want to say, too, though, that I did see a lot of people talking about the fact that it seemed really quick for him to make that transition, but I didn't feel that at all. And in fact, I thought that, just like you said, that scene setting up the him kind of coming to terms with it because of what his father did in his past, I thought that was actually quite a lengthy thing that he did to show that it was how he came over that.
No, I think part of the issue is really that they didn't convey the passage of time and him healing fat as, you know, sort of long enough, because it felt like like 2-3 days when it was probably closer to like a week or two.
Yeah, it could have been.
How long did he drift down that river just bleeding?
and how long was he in the cave? Like, I think it would have been a little easier for people to handle the transition had we known, fell out at, you know, in the fall, and then he came out in the winter.
Well, it took him more than a day for that wound to heal, because it healed fully. So it might have been interesting. I might have to rewatch the episode to see what they did with the moon. If they tried to tie the lunar cycles, like, from one full moon to another or something, that might help the passage of time.
No, I mean, I know we went from sort of rain and what looked like leaves on trees to barren trees and snow. So, I mean, it's at the very least a couple of weeks, I think.
I think also what might make things a little tricky is that from the first episode, as soon as the Daughters of Aku leave their training camp until they find Jack in the next episode, we're not sure how much time it actually takes. So without really knowing that, it kind of, you know, makes it a little difficult to discern how long it took them to track Jack down again. Because it feels like it shouldn't take them that long, because they found his blood, they followed the river. Like, it feels like it shouldn't take them more than a few days to track him down from that.
I kind of feel like we're nitpicking, honestly.
We totally are.
I mean, the only thing that really bothered me about the episode that is a nitpick is the fact that he basically gave out Kill la Kill levels of blood, but yet they still had a hard time following him. And I'm kind of like, anyone could follow this. They don't have to be a master tracker to find giant spools of blood everywhere. But anyway, that's, again, just a nitpick.
I kind of feel that time is probably being fudged here.
Yeah.
And I mean, also, Jack does not age, and maybe he does not heal the same as other humans.
Yeah, that's also a thing. Like, there are a couple of, like, nitpicky questions this episode brings up, but none of them make it a bad episode. Like, this was still friggin' awesome.
The episode was fucking amazing. It was the best episode of the night. The show blows all the other shows away. Anime stays losing, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's no question at that point. But, you know, I don't think it's unfair to, you know, discuss some of these minor contradictions and whatnot.
I'm going to make a statement and say that I think this is definitely the best, no matter what, being the best-looking show of the year.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, just that one sequence in the last episode in the tomb with the music and... I mean, that.
Well,
that,
speaking of that, I wanted to mention that the music in general is really good, and it continues to be, and it's something that I think was missing from the previous version of Samurai Jack.
I mean, the previous version was a lot more silent. There wasn't as much going on musically. I mean, when there was, it was great. It's just that, you know, a lot of episodes would focus more on environmental sounds, you know?
I think both the previous incarnation of Jack and the current incarnation of Jack use silence rather similarly. I think it's just that when they actually use music, you can see the difference. But they both, I think, use silence a lot and use it well. So I don't think it's a change in silence. It's just a change in nature when it's actually used.
Yeah. It feels like in this version of it, Gendy's grown a lot more as a director. Like, he feels a lot more mature here.
Yeah.
Not just the show, but as, you know, a writer and a creator, this does feel more mature than it did before.
It feels like I'm watching a magnum opus.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely this show perfected, I think.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, keep in mind, Jack won an Emmy before for The Birth of Evil. I'd be surprised if they don't find a way to manage one for this season, because, damn.
So,
I mean, just that one sequence from the last episode is up there with everything from The Birth of Evil.
Let's talk about the fight scene in this episode, because holy shit.
He just beasted them.
Like,
I mean, this is some good-ass fight scenes. No powering up, no yelling, staring at each other for 20 minutes. Just get her in, get her done. That's how fights, like, normally occur. Like, fights are quick. They aren't, like, long, strung out.
Right. And I like how this fight showed the experience gap between Jack and the sisters. Because he was using the, the white space like he did when he fought that ninja, you know, to sort of hide himself.
I think they're pretty well matched, actually.
Well, yeah, skill-wise, it's, you know, I'm saying sort of experience-wise, Jack's fought way more people who are way tougher than them.
Yeah, maybe it reminds me of that Black Panther panel where that guy is like, I've trained all my life to defeat you. And Black Panther's just like, then you have already lost because I have trained all my life to face the unknown. And it's like, yep. This is that.
Yeah, it's basically that. Jack basically took, you know, all his experiences and sort of put it to bear against the sisters in this fight and completely wiped them out. I mean, I don't think there wasn't a single one that he didn't one-shot.
Yeah.
I think, actually, this gap in experience, I think, was eloquently highlighted by that encounter the sisters had when they met those deer. And they were like, what the hell is going on? It kind of shows you how they're so narrowly focused in their skill set and their worldview and basically what they've learned that, like, even though necessarily knowing how what deers do, you know, that doesn't necessarily help you in a fight. I think it just exemplifies just the entire gap between them and Jack. And the only reason it was a challenge was from the second episode, the element of surprise, and the third episode, just their numbers. But even then, Jack just, you know, one-shotting them, basically.
The scene with the deer also, you know, one, it basically uses dramatic irony to make Jack killing them all, like, morally gray, because he's doing his, your choices led you here, so if you don't stop, I'm going to kill you and you have only yourselves to blame. But, of course, we know something that Jack does not.
That they didn't have a choice in the first place. This is how they were raised. They were in a crazy cult. Like, I think, I mean, Ashi survived, obviously, you know.
I mean, obviously, there's a scene in this episode where she literally takes watch so she can look at the stars, and also, you know, she fell.
She's the one we don't see die.
Well, we did.
There was another one. There was another one.
One that Jack threw off, but they'll probably just fudge it, and she, like, landed on a broken tree and died or something. But Ashi and Jack
took the rock or
exact same fall, so they're probably both alive.
I'm still betting on an Ashi redemption.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't bet against that either. I think at this point, you know, she's the only one of the sisters who is named. She's got a, you know, really good voice actress.
You don't bring up Tara Strong for a scrub or a jobber.
No, not at this point in her career. Like, she's obviously going to be going through a redemption. If not a redemption arc, then she's going to come back and sort of break Jack. Because it feels like in this episode, sort of the only reason he was able to do what he did was because, you know, he remembered what his father said and sort of how he explained it and, you know, how people's choices lead them down certain paths. And I think him realizing these people didn't have a choice is going to bring him to a pretty dark place.
Yeah, I think his arc in terms of killing people is not done yet because I think he will find that out and that's going to be fucking devastating.
Yeah.
You know what it could have been, too, is I wonder if we'll ever see, like, maybe he didn't lose the sword. Maybe he threw it away because he couldn't kill Aku.
No, no
I
that...
I mean, we saw the...
Akum first episode. He has no qualms killing Akum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. The only other thing I want to say about this episode is I love that the very first thing we hear is a talking frog that says, "They're coming."
And it's voiced by Jack's VA.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. So,
oh,
you
I didn't
know,
notice that.
Yeah, apparently it is. So, like, it could have been, like,
a wide range, so.
Or it could be that that's, like, him in his head giving that frog a voice.
Right, it's like the frog is not talking because it's a talking frog. It's talking because Jack is hallucinating because he's bleeding out. So he's
Would anyone be mad if I nominated Phil Lamar for Best Voice Actor?
Well, let's come on. Let's let the year go a little bit farther, and we keep having these conversations about this is the best. This is the best. It's like, come on, man. We don't know what's coming.
Jack is going to win. It's not
going to be very hard to top Jack in almost any respect. I feel. I will say before we move on to Super that we should touch upon the wolf a bit. I'll admit that I actually got a little confused and thought it was a new wolf rather than the wolf from last episode. But I thought also once I realized my error. I thought it was kind of a nice continuation of that symbolism from the previous episode into this next episode. Previous episode, the wolf won, but he was badly beaten, almost near death, like Jack. And this episode, the wolf recovers and then kind of moves on, similar to Jack. So I thought that was kind of cool. He got his wolf buddy. It just took a while.
I do wonder if we've seen the last of Wolf Buddy.
I think we might have, at least for the time being, because it does seem like he sort of finished his arc up.
Maybe he'll pop in later from time to time, but not as, like, a sidekick that's with him permanently.
Last-minute save. I was just going to say, if anyone here has seen one of the ending bits of Part 4, you might kind of... there we go, yeah. Whoever said that got it. Okay, good.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right, that would be amusing if something like that happened, though I don't expect it to. But, yeah, the wolf is cool. Who we will see back is that Green Rider who's most likely deaf or something. I don't know what it is yet, but we'll see more of that.
Honestly, I rewatched all the episodes the other day, and every time that guy shows up, Jack sort of steals himself and sort of does what he needs to do. So, like, part of me can't help but wonder is that, like, some sort of manifestation of Jack? Like,
I
kind of feel like this is leading to the Green Rider is not a physical character. It's just Jack fucking with himself.
Yeah, no, like, it's just Jack's, you know, sort of, like, warrior spirit or whatever.
His stand?
I mean, not so much a stand as, like, a part of his personality.
No, I'm just playing around.
He was joking.
So are we ready to move on to Super, or do we have more to say about Jack?
Well, we could always talk about Jack the entire time, but let's move on to Super. Dragon Ball Super Episode 12, The Universe Will Shatter. No. Clash, Destroyer versus Super Saiyan God. And they scream.
Many times.
What I didn't like was that these energy shockwave things were not in the movie. I don't know why they added them except to pad for time, and it was kind of stupid, honestly, because we know the universe is not going to explode from that. It would just be stupid if the show ended because they exploded the universe or something from punching each other.
They did explode a green planet, which I sure as heck hope isn't Namek 2.
Like, imagine if that was new Namek, just like...
And then new Guru is like, oh god damn it!
No, but, I mean, this is sort of going to make another fight later in the next arc look really stupid.
Oh yeah, the Dragon Ball Super has issues with power scaling all over the place, honestly. It'll come up again in the future arcs. They're just like, people are like way weaker, way stronger than they have any reason to be, and it's really weird sometimes.
I mean, Dragon Ball has power scaling issues.
Yeah, no.
I mean, yes, but Super is like worse about it.
You know, like you think someone is someplace, and then all of a sudden they're someplace else for no discernible reason, and then they're back up to where they were.
Well, along with yelling, they also apparently can now summon dragon personas.
They can.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was random as all hell. That wasn't in the movie either.
It wouldn't be anime if someone didn't make a dragon out of something and then just like, I'm going to throw this dragon at you.
Especially in a show called Dragon Ball.
The best thing about this episode, though, was watching the Elder Kai turn into a total pervert.
He's always a pervert. I love it.
He's talking about panties and stuff and showing off his magazine.
If you think
I feel like those sorts of jokes on Dragon Ball are a little played out. Plus, why would the Elder Kai care about human women? I don't know. Whatever. I mean,
it's a joke, man. No, it's funny.
That's Roshi's shtick. Like,
yeah, it feels like every sort of legendary old man is a giant pervert in this show.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was funny because it came out of left field. I wasn't expecting him to do it. That's all.
Now you should wait until you see it revealed in Kai. This was sort of it wasn't as extreme.
Okay, so I'm looking at Twitter, and I'm looking at images of the new reboot.
Of what?
The reboot of reboot.
Oh.
Oh, shit.
Guess what? It's live action.
What the? What? Come on, man. Like, so it's like, is it like half live action, half CG or something?
I'm going to send you a link to the tweet right now.
I'm
going to post it in the chat.
So bad. Like, why would you do that?
There it is.
You care a little about Super, we're going to talk about reboot now, or?
No, I just thought it would be really hilarious to say, hey, look, they're rebooting reboot, and it's live action, fuckers.
Sense. Like, defeats the entire purpose. Like, the whole point of reboot is they're inside a computer, so it should look like they're inside a goddamn computer.
Oh my god, come on. Just looking at this makes me angry.
I kind of feel sorry for this YTV because they seem like they're excited about it, and every reply is just like, what are you doing? This is terrible, blah, blah, blah.
Isn't that like a Canadian kids? Yeah, it's a Canadian kids network.
Yeah. YTV is the, like, basically the Canadian Cartoon Network sort of thing.
I know. I used to wind up going up to Canada a lot when I was a kid because my dad had to go up there for work, and I wind up watching that. And they actually had some pretty cool stuff on at the time.
Is YTV going through their CN Real phase?
I remember watching, I have some relatives in Canada too, so I've been up there a few times. I remember watching some episodes of Sailor Moon and other stuff up there. Yeah. And Beast Wars, I remember Beast Wars watching that up there too at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, here's Shard here saying, burn this will all of the fire? Oh, burn this with all. Okay, he meant with, but type will. Okay, there we go.
Autocorrect!
Are they serious with this? What the hell are they thinking? Which one is Bob and which one is Enzo? I can't tell.
There is no Bob or Enzo. There is only Jake and Kyle and Jessica.
Seriously?
Anyway, Sand Whale and me. Sand Whale and me, day 2, Search and Destroy, more weird shit.
Did Marco tell Oishi that us Toonami watchers are just a bunch of stoners and to make something that a stoner would like? Because I don't get the appeal of this.
So Oishi came to them with it.
Oh, so he knew, he heard the stereotype of the Toonami stoner and said, hey, Toonami, let me make you some stone live action show.
Basically. No, he's just a stoner. And so he made a stoner thing. And, fate.
The problem I'm having is that this episode was exactly the same as the last episode. I mean, I could barely tell them apart.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a part where the giant CG whale tentacle things laughed at her and she chased them for a bit. I guess that was like a minute or two that was different. But yeah, the beginning of this episode and the end of this episode were pretty much the same as the last one. So
mm-hmm.
There was like 3 minutes of this episode was like the same as the first one, and there was like 2 minutes in the middle where it was different and also fucking weird.
You know what I'm getting the impression of? It's almost like they handed him some money, and he's like, make us something cool. And then he's like, well, okay, what's the least amount of work I can do so that I can pocket the rest of this money? And so he's like, well, okay, we'll do it live action, and then we'll reuse a bunch of shots, and we'll make it like 2 minutes long each. And like, look at all this money I've made.
I don't think they lack effort, but I don't know.
We mentioned this last week that we don't know who finds this funny. We think that maybe Oishi and maybe the Japanese culture might find this humorous, but I don't think it's working for us.
No.
I don't know. I guess I'm sure no expert in Japanese humor, but there's not enough yelling and, sweat drops in
Japanese. I don't know. Japanese television is pretty weird sometimes, man.
I know.
What the fuck is up with the peas?
Peas?
This is the second episode where it's ended on her looking at the can of peas, and she looks at the peas, and there's a dramatic music cue of, like, dun-dun-dun! And then she eats the peas, and that's the end of the episode, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
That's it. That's the point. That's the problem. We don't get it. It doesn't make sense. And I and they warned us. They were like, this isn't going to make a lot of sense. Well, yeah, but, I mean, you got to make some sense, because we don't even know what we're, how we're supposed to react to this.
I get the general plot of the thing. She got stranded on a planet, and she got to survive.
And it's done in a video game style.
Yeah, outside of that, I got nothing.
It's not really funny. It looks interesting, and that's it. Like, that's all I've got to go on. It's not clever. I mean, it's like a parody that's just failing.
I think we actually spent more time talking about the episode than it actually took.
Okay, let's move on quickly to Dragon Ball Z Kai then. Dragon Ball Z Kai, the final chapter, is episode 110. What happened, Piccolo? An unexpected outcome in the first round. So, predictably, Krillin wrecks that guy.
You mean the genie?
Yeah.
He just, like, punch.
Slap, 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 kick.
And then the rest of the episode was basically Piccolo being constipated.
Yeah, that's about right.
I like that do remember Piccolo. It's like, hey, this guy was in a previous tournament. He blew up the stadium and killed everyone, but here he is again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird how, like, no one seemed to recognize him for, like, episodes on end, and then all of a sudden everyone recognized him. It was weird.
The announcer recognizes him, and he recognizes
Yeah, but the announcer says it, and, like, it feels the crowd is like, oh, yeah, I feel like I kind of remember it now it's been said, or, like, I don't know. It's a little weird. Like, you think they were just not in the tournament again after what he did last time, but...
Well, I mean, think about how many, you know, world-ending things that, you know, happened between then and now. I mean, it's a small fight compared to...
Are you giving the stupid people of this world an excuse?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's sort of like with the Trump thing. Like, who the hell remembers what scandal he had in January when, you know, you got what's going on now? Like, I will say I like the announcer remembering him and being totally okay with him staying because all he cares about is putting on a good show.
Yeah, he's
like, honestly, they'll probably ban him from the tournament in the going forth because more because of him standing around and doing nothing than blowing up the stadium and killing a bunch of people.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have been the announcer would have totally been down with blowing up the stadium. He's like trying. He said try not to do it this time. Like, he didn't even tell him not to. He's like, try not to blow up the ring this time. No promises, dude.
I like that the, like, Bulma and Chi-Chi are kind of, like, going at it a little bit. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, this guy, he's quote-unquote, fights. It's hilarious to see this, knowing that just 30 minutes earlier, the Elder Kai was showing him pinups, and he was freaking out about the world ending.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, this is the same character that was hanging out with old pervert Kai from the last
episode. Oh, okay, okay.
Literally the exact same character.
Okay. Yeah. Well, for a second there, I thought you meant the old guy was him, and I'm like, that doesn't make sense. The other thing I would say, too, that, and I want to give props to, is that I kind of like some of the interesting shot composition in this episode. Like, they will do these things where, like, a slice go through the screen, and you'll see, like, two different characters at the same time, and... They did a lot of it towards the end of the episode. I thought it looked really cool and is different.
Yeah.
And transitioning both of the music choice and the panning, as you just mentioned, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually pretty excited to see Videl fight because, you know, there's actually some stakes because, you know, she can actually maybe lose.
Yeah.
What? That big guy? Come on.
I mean, that guy touched him and he was electric. Videl might have a problem.
And they also revealed, too, that guy had been in the tournament before, but now he's all bulked up and different, which I haven't seen this, but I do know enough to know that when someone has, like, an M on their head, that means something important, and both of these guys have that. So I'm assuming there's something going on here where he's been, like, he's being manipulated or he's been altered or something like that.
I mean, yeah. The answer to your question is yes, but you'll see as this show moves on.
Cool. Right.
Like, I will want to say, like, where's the steroid testing in this place? The guy threw, like, what, 27 different levels since, like, a year ago, and nobody's like, hey, we got to test you for juicing. You're totally on that new HGH shit, aren't you?
Yeah, he's got, like, blood serious sample. Roid rage, too.
Yeah. But, like, seriously, where is the testing for, like, the HGH or anything?
They don't do that in this world. Everybody's too nice.
Everyone's too jacked.
They're also dumb, so they probably wouldn't know to do it.
Well, I mean, look at that guy in, you know, Gohan's class. Like, everyone in that class is freaking jacked as shit. And Gohan looks like a skinny nerd in comparison.
I'm also, like, everyone in this universe is jacked as shit from running from dinosaurs all day.
That could be true. Is. Also, I thought it was cool that, I mean, not that it's a big deal, but those characters actually did show up in this episode.
They did. And they're going to show up in next episode, I think.
And Dragon Ball, the kids that often the less buff or tiny you are, the more dangerous you actually end up being. So I'll just mention that. So that actually kind of plays into this a little bit too, but I guess you'll see how things proceed.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yay.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 22, A True Warrior. What did you think of this episode, C-Caller?
I'll start out by saying, beep, beep. it was pretty cool. It was a good episode and really exciting. And again, what this show does so well is it always kind of subverts what you think is going to happen. So everybody's like three moves ahead of everyone else. And I like that a lot. I like watching JoJo outsmart the bad guy. And
yeah, it's a lot more fun to watch him sort of game the bad guy using his head instead of just like, my beam is more powerful than your beam.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, this episode could maybe have used, like, not had narration from Lisa and Cars and the entire Peanut Gallery.
And the narrator.
This episode had four fight narrators.
That's what made it amazing.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's just the way this show is, though, because, you know, there's no Speedwagon now, so it's got to be everybody else picking up the slack.
Yeah, it's basically like, my narrator's got narrators.
But, like, Lisa and Cars are literally having a narrator fight where one of them's like, Nani? And the other one's like, and then he's just like, wait, Nani? And then the other one's like,
we're like, raises their glasses up and just says, well, actually, what's happening is.
That's what's so awesome about that dynamic. They're not only sitting there, they're like, they're also sort of competing.
Like, and the title of this episode should be Narrator Fights.
Yeah. Also, it's just, I like, again, it's just how stupid this show is. It's so fun that JoJo is just so cocky. Like, he doesn't give a hell about what's going on. Like, he can just be, like, in the fight of his life and just be, like, cracking wise at the bad guys.
That's why he's awesome.
It's not that Joseph does not care about what's going on. Rather, he cares a lot about what's going on any moment in time.
Oh, no.
Subverting his opponents and makes them underestimate him, and that helps win battles, large and small.
Yeah, I basically got what you said, because unfortunately.
Okay, for people that didn't listen, JoJo's basically gaming his opponent by acting, you know, smarmy and like he doesn't give a shit. He actually does give a shit. He just uses that to make them underestimate him.
I see.
There are some classic lines in this episode, like, if only he had worn a boot that allowed Wamuu to grab his ankle! Or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't get that. That was so weird, because he did wear boots.
Basically, what they were saying is that if JoJo was wearing, like, regular shoes, Wamuu would have been able to grab his ankle, his exposed skin, and start, like, absorbing him or something like that.
Oh,
but because
okay.
He was wearing, like, knee-high boots, his skin was protected off, so there's no thing for Wamuu to grab or absorb. He needs to, like, touch skin to skin, similar to how Santana did that back in episodes ago. Or when Wamuu was ACDC, his skin touched Mark's face, and that's when absorption happened.
Right.
So that's what the vampire was saying about. If JoJo's wearing his regular shoes, part of his skin or his ankle or whatever or his calf would have been exposed, and Wamuu would have grabbed him to leather, which just slipped off.
yeah, basically Wamuu's got to grab his skin, otherwise his technique don't work, and, you know, god damn it.
Also, he shot his severed arms out of the hole in his chest.
That was awesome.
That was great.
How did he get them in there in the first place? Like, part of me wonders that, but then part of me's like, nah, fuck that, I don't care. That was awesome.
I kind of assumed, like, his arms retreated into, went further up his arm and into his, like, thorax, kind of that way.
Yeah.
So, like, the flow of blood from how the vein, like, you know, how your veins flow blood from your extremities to your heart.
Yeah.
I assume his arms did that sort, but, you know, he's also not human, so, you know.
Yeah, I sort of assume, like, they just went inside his body and, you know, just shot out. But, I mean, knowing JoJo, he could have just ripped them off and stuffed them in his chest.
Also, so he got his eyes poked out by JoJo, which was pretty cool.
No, he himself poked his own eyes.
Because eyes are a weakness.
Yeah. Well, but he basically became Sanigayama from Kill la Kill.
Yeah.
And it's like, I got to take out my eyes so I can just use all my other senses or whatever.
The blind fighter is a pretty well-worn trope across, anime, manga.
What
even
was that,
like,
to
Chinese, Korean, I think, literature, too. Like,
yeah, I mean, even in the West, we have heroes like Daredevil. It was just hilarious how he did it. He's basically like, blast you. If I hadn't used my eyes, I would have won. They're just a weakness against you. And then he just blinds himself.
But Cars was like, watch his resolve here. He's going to do something you do not expect. And he does it, yeah.
It was just like applying smelling salts to himself. You're trying to give yourself a wake-up call, like, stop fucking around, Wamuu, get in your head in the game.
But with sharp nails and eyeballs instead. I'm sorry, that thing just, it was completely ridiculous. I'm just like, yes!
Ah, JoJo is pretty fucking ridiculous.
Best thing you can say about JoJo's is that it makes bullshit that you complain about in other shows something you enjoy here.
Yeah.
That's bullshit, but I believe it.
And we talked about that a little bit when JoJo first started. It's because it leans so hard into the bullshit. It's like, yeah, no, I know I'm full of shit, but, you know, you love me.
So the episode ends when it's revealed that Wham is going to do his ultimate mastery.
Yes.
So I do not know what that is. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It's no different than your, like, level 3 super in fighting games, ultra special technique, you know. It's, you know, use a voltmeter, get in there, like, last shot.
It's going to be friggin' awesome. That's all I know. That's all I need to know.
Yep. Anyway, let's move on to Tokyo Ghoul. Tokyo Ghoul Episode 1, Tragedy, starting off on a great foot with the episode titles here. The second that guy just slams up into that fish tank and he's like, I'm like, oh boy, it's one of these shows.
I will say, I like how it started off a little slower with, you know, establishing the characters and everything. I will say, though, that I like how Parasite handled this better, because it's basically the same first episode as Parasite. It's just part of it was, I don't know.
I was going to say, this is a point someone made in the thread, unfortunately I can't remember who, but that basically this show turns high and has to go kill all the other full wise, the show kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically what we have here. It's one of, it's very common show structure that's, you know, pretty popular, but that's basically what this show is.
Yeah, it just, like, for me, I feel like I've seen this before, I know where it's going to go. It doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like a new take on an old idea. It feels like the same take on the same idea.
Here's my take on the show so far, and I've not seen it. I liked it. I mean, I didn't love it, but
no, that's fair.
I think it was pretty good. I mean, I thought it was all right. You're right. You're totally right that it is, like, not reinventing the wheel here.
No,
it's basically the same thing, but. And it was, I think, trying a little too hard to be edgy. Those are my two big complaints, is that it's trying a little too hard with the edge, and it's trying, and it's not really bringing a lot of creativity. But I did think it looked nice. I thought the plot was moving pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And I think overall I was just kind of into it. I was interested in seeing what was happening. And the weirdest thing about the show, the one thing that threw me for a loop, and I did not know this, is that it's like a typical vampire story, except not only are they ghouls, but apparently society in general knows they exist. And so I'm interested to see how that's going to play out.
That's sort of what sort of made me fall off at the very end. Because it's sort of like, okay, society knows these ghouls exist. Obviously, they don't like them. But, like, if both sides sort of came together, they'd be able to find an equilibrium, you know? Because the ghouls, they only eat dead bodies, you know?
Until now.
But, you know, they could, like, supposedly they could live 11 months off one dead body.
Well, it's a month, you know, 1 month, but whatever.
Oh, I thought it was 11 months off of a single dead body.
They can eat once for a month, apparently.
Okay. I misunderstood that.
Because I feel like I've heard both of those in the same episode, and I remember getting confused about that. So we may have
You'll
probably explain it better in a future episode.
Yeah, because it, like, whatever it was, they can survive a long time off of, like, one meal. So, you know, people donate their bodies to science and stuff, and, you know, sort of like, okay, after you're done dissecting them in class, why not, you know, feed it to the ghoul?
I would just jump in as someone who's actually dissected human bodies, that would be a pretty bad idea, because the way human bodies are preserved would make them toxic to, I imagine, literally anything in the universe.
Right now, from what I know, it seems like the only reason that these, you know, the people don't get along with the ghouls is that nobody's really looking for a way to coexist.
Well, okay, so let me stop you guys right there for a second, because you talked about a lot of stuff that wasn't in the episode. They never once mentioned that they only eat dead people.
Yeah, they did.
Well, first of all, I would say, A, they did mention to eat dead people, to my recollection, but also, B, the fact that they're fighting over feeding grounds doesn't make sense if you're eating dead people.
Exactly.
So that's actually contradiction from my
recollection. They eat dead people, and then because they killed them,
but that,
so they're dead.
That doesn't, or whatever. Well, and the other thing
was, if they were murderers, they couldn't coexist in society because the government would be up their ass.
Well, they don't.
Which I presume that's what
the idea I got was that they only coexist because they know that if they act, because they know that if the ghouls were like, you know what, we run the earth now, then there would be nothing to stop the ghouls from running the earth because, you know, they have fucking superpowers.
Well, that's the other part that's weird, is that they're in hiding. So it's a real interesting, like, situation where apparently we are fully aware. It's again, imagine a story with vampires where we know vampires exist, but we're not out there trying to just stop the vampires. We just sort of be like, oh, okay, well, vampires are a thing. We just got to be careful.
And isn't that True Blood? Isn't that True Blood from HBO?
Possibly. I don't know. I've never saw that.
There's a scene in True Blood where a guy is giving a live newscast, a vampire just zooms in and grabs his heart out on live TV.
Holy shit. That's
awesome. In this show, ghouls are a known thing, and it makes more sense when you talk about the fact that they're supposed to only eat dead people. Then I can kind of go with the idea that, okay, living humans aren't going to be afraid about the fact that there are ghouls around. So the fact that, like, suddenly ghouls are attacking and killing people, if that's a new thing, then the story makes a lot more sense. But I will say that the episode did not do a good job of explaining that to me, that this was a new thing. I thought this was a normal thing for ghouls to kill people.
I think it has to be because
if they only ate people that had already died that they didn't kill, it'd be like, hey, where do we find the ghouls? I don't know. Check the morgue and the hospital and the funeral home.
It's the only thing that makes sense, though. I mean, like, it's the only reason why people would be living their everyday lives and not being afraid that they're about to die.
Yeah, this is
the conclusion that the show doesn't actually make sense.
Yeah, because I've never seen this before, and it sort of left me with a bunch of questions, which I've, you know, been told are presumably going to be answered next episode. So I'm willing to give them, you know, like two or three more episodes, see how it, you know, starts going.
I mean, again, my overarching impression, this first takeaway, is that I think that this show impressed me more than I expected it to. And the only thing I didn't like was the edge and the yelling. Like, it just seemed a little too hammy.
Like, I'm worried that the main character is going to stay this way.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because he gets like a 1 to 2 episode pass on this because he kind of got dealt a fucking shitty hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
He gets a free edgelord period.
Yeah. Grace period. The one thing that sort of has me confused about, you know, sort of how he got changed, and, you know, like, I'm willing to wave it off to a certain extent, but I feel like I do have to mention it. Didn't they test the organs before they put it in him?
Well, I will say two things. First of all, doing an organ transplant of that nature without permission from the patient and whatnot is highly unethical.
Yeah. But yes, it is.
Well, my understanding is that plot point actually gets explained later. That's my understanding.
I don't know anything
about the series beyond this episode, but someone told me that plot point gets brought back up and it's explained later.
Okay, because I'm like, how could they test it to make sure it's a match to put it in him?
Yeah, I think we're really
sort
asking...
of not realize, oh, it's an organ from a ghoul.
Yeah, again, we're asking way more questions than I think the series expects us to at this point, because I could ask questions like, do doctors know what ghouls are like inside their bodies and stuff like that? I mean, we just need to let all that go to the side until we have seen more of the show, because now it's too early for us to even question it.
I will say it's both that I think, obviously, we have to wait to give the show a little more time to explain what's going on, but I also feel it could have done a better job with its first episode kind of filling in some details. So I think it's both.
Yeah.
Also add, though, that regards to main character, again, I don't really know anything about the series beyond this episode, but I've seen promotional material where the main character wears like a S&M mask or something. So I think at some point he goes like insane or like badass evil or something. Yes. I don't really know, but I've seen at least material where it looks like he changes personality, but I'm not entirely sure what's going on there.
Yeah, all right. We'll see more. And then again, I think that's part of the Ghoul Society or whatever we'll learn more about. The other thing I liked about this episode, too, were like, I always like episodes with badass females, and this episode ended with a really kick-ass badass female, so that was cool.
Yeah, she was pretty awesome. I didn't really expect her to have that role, I will admit. Like, I expected her to be like, you know, his tie to regular human society.
I mean,
like,
the second she shows up, she's either, okay, she's part of an elite ghoul killing squad, or B, she's also a ghoul.
There's also C, she's the regular human love interest. But, you know, like, I thought it was going to be, you know, either A or C. I didn't really expect it to be B.
Well, I think when you contrast her, because she showed up in that cafe, and the way the thing was framed, it was clear that she's really important. I think the fact that they started off with, you know, the first ghoul and the main character were all lovey-dovey, and her in contrast to that, I felt like it probably wasn't going to be that she'd end up being necessarily like a lovey-dovey interest. I think there would be a strong contrast between her and I think Rise was her name, that first ghoul, because I think that's what thematically makes the most sense in terms of like good writing. I will just say, or at least I will just hope that I've seen a lot of characters like this where, like, oh, wow, this woman's pretty awesome. And then, like, three episodes later, she gets, like, warped to oblivion or something. And she, like, spends the rest of the show getting rescued and whatnot. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I don't actually know. But, yes, I'll say she left a positive first impression, and I hope that continues for the rest of the series. I don't know if it does, because I feel like I've been fooled before in a sense with other shows. But so I'll just say that.
Like, I hope at the end of sort of, like, the four episodes or so, you know, grace period that, you know, new shows tend to get, that this is really good, because I could really go with another, you know, sort of good show on the block to make up for not having One Piece in, you know, the arc that we missed.
And I'll just say, too, that, like, we're just kind of beating around the bush here, but this is clearly the Rukia character, without a doubt.
Oh, yes. Clearly.
I didn't think of that. That's a very good comparison. But then Rukia, like, got shat on for, like, 80 episodes before she actually did anything, so
she got shot on again.
Not a good path to follow. Even though Rukia was kind of a fun character, she didn't really get to do much for most of Bleach.
By most, you mean all.
And she had a few moments.
She had a few moments.
Like, she had a few chapters that you can count on one hand. So.
No, but, like, I will say, like, I know I pointed out a lot of stuff I was sort of iffy about with this, but I think if the show cuts down on the edge a little bit, I could enjoy it more. Because, I mean, it did look like, okay, I know how generally this goes, and I'm okay with watching that sort of thing. You know, like, it looked like it could be fun.
So, I like the fact that they kept in this, like, apparently really silly thing where it's like, hey, remember that one guy who got his head kicked off? Well, he was a fitness instructor.
Oh, yeah. That was cool. I mean, it's like this such a dark show, but to have these little, like, post-credit, like, comedy bits is interesting.
Yeah, yeah, better at least from Hellsing, where the wacky comedy was within the show at the same time where the edge was happening. Here, it just at least moved to end, so, you know, you don't get such whiplash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little shocked they kept it here, but got rid of it for Hunter x Hunter.
Oh, does Hunter x Hunter have those as well?
Yes, it does, and they are absolutely bonkers.
This episode didn't have an opening and ending. It only had one of them, right? So,
well, it's a classic, you know, the first episode of any anime oftentimes does not have the opening because they want to fit more stuff in.
Right, so I'm not sure if those omakes or whatever they call it at the end will stay once the opening and ending are on each episode.
Yeah, I don't think so. So, also, speaking of, you know, weird end things, Hunter x Hunter. Hunter x Hunter episode 44, build up to a fierce battle. Holy shit, Uvogen is fucking awesome!
He just bit a guy's head off.
None of the things I saw coming, and I was surprised every time.
Yeah, the bite, he didn't bite his head off, he bit half his face off.
He bit through his head, yeah.
Yes.
He bit his brain out of his skull.
He was missing half his head.
And then he used part of his skull as a bullet to kill the other guy.
Yeah.
Like, the guy tried to pull out his hand and was like, nope.
So, like, yeah.
He used haki. Awesome. He tried to block it with haki and everything, and it's just, nope.
Nen.
Yes, Nen. Sorry.
I guess it doesn't matter now. One Piece is off the block. We can talk about
it. Yeah, haki. No, I'm sorry. A One Piece article came up on my timeline, and I'm looking at it, and it's just...
Anyway, so, yeah, Big Bang Impact... Pretty awesome.
It's just a regular punch with Nen.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it actually killed the guy, though. He, like, still crawled out and then died. Enough time to warn the other beasts, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I will point out, this guy is actually the same Nen type as Gon is. They're both enhancement. So this is sort of the top tier of what that is capable of.
Well, we also got to see Melody use her Nen ability, which was basically playing a flute and making everyone, like, chill out.
Yeah.
And even then, Kurapika was still like, yeah, I'm still going to murder some people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you were him, would you not try and murder some people?
Like, you knew I wasn't chill, but you did not know just how not chill I was.
Like, even when I'm chill, I'm still going to murder that guy?
Yeah. Well, Kurapika did surprise everyone, including the viewers and the other characters in the show, when he literally captured this guy. And he's using a technique where apparently he's made some kind of, like, promise in his heart that if he can only use this power against the spider people, and as long as he does that and he keeps that promise, he has, super mega amounts of power.
Yeah, it's going to get explained next episode, but it's basically, like, normally Nen is an additive power. Like, you know, you throw a punch, okay, you add Nen to the punch, it adds to the punch's power. What Kurapika did is more multiplicative. Like, with him, I will only use this vow on the spiders. If I use it on someone else, I will die. Like, it multiplies the power instead. Yeah.
And that's apparently what makes it so powerful is that, one... You know, the consequence is the biggest consequence there can be outside of, like, your soul is forfeit or some shit.
Yeah.
And two, he can only use it on, like, nine people in the world.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And this is sort of what makes Nen as unique as it is, because two people can basically have the same power, but one guy's might be better, if only because his is more tightly used.
Yeah. Well, I definitely enjoying the Nen powers in this show, and I mean, I'm starting to now finally get a grasp on what you guys were talking about early on in the, like, the first season about how, like, oh, you haven't seen anything yet. Oh, clearly, these are the top of the tier kind of Nen usage here, and it's pretty awesome. And I do like how Kurapika has, he has, like, the chains, and then when he grabs the dude, it's coming off of his, like, middle finger. And just for some reason, it's making me think he's going to, like, flip him the bird.
He really should.
Yeah.
Also, Kurapika is he's a terrible guy. He's texting and driving.
Yes.
So they're like, seriously, he's going to kill somebody.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hunter has been I didn't know anything about Hunter before it came onto the blog, but I know a lot of you guys have been clamoring for, like, oh my god, Hunter. I can see why so far so many people were so excited to have it on the blog. It's pretty, just it's just solid as hell shonen so far. I thought the pacing of the Hunter arc was kind of like, you know, get on with it, you know. There's some some nitpicks and whatnot, but overall, I've been very pleased with what's going on so far.
Yeah, honestly, this arc, you know, sort of what you've seen in this episode and the one before it, is more indicative of what the show is actually like than the Hunter arc.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is after the point where the show decided, oh, well, I guess we're going to keep going, and also we're not going to be a kid's show, so fuck it.
Yeah, and in terms of, like, sort of the top tier thing, like, there's still guys well above Uvo. He's really strong, but there's still a couple of guys that are like, holy crapola.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I still remember the guy that was in charge of the examinations, the old guy, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, when you see what he can do, holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also episode 40-something out of, like, 160, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of room for everyone to grow.
So let's talk about a show that we aren't as interested in.
Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn. Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn, episode 12, A Private War. And boy, I'm just so fucking done. This is a show in which the characters consist entirely of people who Mikazuki murdered while they were monologuing in the back half of Iron Blooded Orphans.
The problem with the show is that these characters do not talk like human beings.
Yep.
Human beings, regardless of the situation, regardless of the tension, regardless of what they're trying to do, what they're trying to argue, do not talk like this ever.
And yeah, I mean, that's what I wrote down. I wrote down, this dialogue is so cringeworthy. Nobody talks like this, much less yells it.
The only people who talk like this are Gundam characters.
Not even specifically
Gundam characters in the Universal Century.
I do want to point out that it's not necessarily a bad thing that they don't talk like people, because, you know, God forbid everyone in fiction talked like actual people. We'd all be, you know, like, endlessly pissed off at it. But, yeah, this is sort of like, I stopped caring.
Well, it's preachy. That's the problem. In JoJo, they talk like non-people, but it's funny because JoJo is crazy and over the top. In this show, people talk like they're giving speeches, and it doesn't work because it's supposed to be dramatic.
Well, I mean,
they're tackling real subjects, like issues of, like, war and post-traumatic stress disorder and familial legacy and revenge and whatnot are, like, real, like, serious, real-life topics. So if you're going to discuss, like, real people. If you're going to talk about, like, my Nen or my Stan beats your Nen or Stan or whatever, it matters a lot less. But if you're talking about, like, depression or, like, sexual anxiety or, you know, whatever real actual topics, you should talk like human beings, or at least, you know, try.
Well, I will say, I think sort of we're misdiagnosing the problem here a little bit. If only because, I mean, there's plenty of shows that, you know, that are well written and that people do really like, that, you know, where the characters do basically monologue to each other or are preachy. It's just not done here. It's not done well in this show in the slightest.
It's
basically the execution of how the characters are written is not good, because there's plenty of shows that'll, you know, shows and books, and, like, people complain about Joy Williams, you know, like, oh, the, her characters don't talk like actual people. They just sort of, you know, say whatever's on their mind and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it works and it's really good. And, you know, it's a lot of fun to read, but
I think those are far and few between. You're right. They do exist, but you have to do it just right. And the problem is we're not invested.
We're not doing it right.
Yes.
Yeah. The problem is the execution here. It's not so much how it. Yeah.
Okay. I would also say I don't think the dub is necessarily doing this many favors.
No, it's
not. Because I necessarily think the voice actors are bad actors or anything, but like the way to enunciate things and stress words and syllables makes it feel more fake. And I don't think the Japanese would be any better either. I don't think it would be. Like, I haven't seen this in Japanese, but I feel like Japanese would be just as, like, if I were a Japanese fluent person watching this and I didn't already, like, love Gundam and whatnot, I'd probably be thinking the same exact things.
Yeah. And also, at this point, I've been previously I've been thinking, well, maybe I would be enjoying the show a noticeable amount more if I was a Gundam, Universal Century Gundam fan. But now this show is kind of making me think, maybe the Universal Century Gundam is bad. Maybe Gundam is bad when it's not Gundam or Build Fighters.
Eighth MS Team in the Pocket, right? That, I remember that being pretty good from a while back. That aired
mostly bad.
That was Universal Century. That was pretty good from my recollection.
Yeah, it's Gundam shows tend to be missed more than they tend to be hit, which is why the good ones stand out so much.
I'll agree with that. They just don't have good writers working these shows. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it is.
Banaja is a god-awful character.
Well, that's what I've been trying to say, is that the problem is that maybe you could pull this off where people basically give dissertations and essays as dialogue if we cared about the characters. But we don't really care about the characters, so they're just talking and we don't want to hear what they have to say. And when they say it in a way that is inhuman and not natural, it makes us hate them even more.
Right. I will say the problem with the characters is that we don't really know what's driving Banaja. Like, we have no idea what he really wants to get out of this, why Banaja he's feeling...
Banaja is literally, he's a kite in the wind.
Yeah, and that's essentially the problem here is, at least with IBO, and there are a lot of complaints to be had about that, don't get me wrong, but at least there we had a solid idea of what these characters wanted. You know, no matter how much we didn't like said character, you know, like, what's her name with the blonde hair? With her, we still know what she wanted. You know, we knew what drove her forward.
What makes that show better, I've said it a million times, is that I actually had more I cared more about the characters in IBO, which is why I'm looking forward to it possibly coming back. These characters in this show are just not interesting, and I just don't care.
Yeah, that I think with regards to these comparing characters between these two shows, I do feel like we had a good sense of what was driving Mikazuki forward and what was driving, I forgot his name.
Orga.
What was driving Orga forward. Whereas Cordelia felt like she was more kind of, flailing in the wind. She was supposed to be like the savior character who, like, you know, Mother Mary or something, like kind of going around saving the common folk, but half the time she didn't know shit about the common folk, which was kind of weird, that kind of conundrum. It didn't really make much sense why people were, like, you know, gushing over her, like, oh my god, Cordelia, oh, I've got the fainting spells, I can't believe she's here. Like, she didn't really felt like she much deserved that kind of respect. She didn't feel like a revolutionary leader or, like, you know, like, there have been a lot of stories about some of these, like, revolutionary leaders kind of in Russia right now, kind of like trying to stand up to Putin, like there's a lot of stories in this resistance leader, and like it's very obvious even from halfway around the world what he's trying to do and why he's trying to do it. Whereas for Cordelia, I didn't really get that sense at all, and that was a very big problem for character. But people like Mikazuka and Orga, I really felt I knew where they stood and what they were trying to do and why they were trying to do it. Whereas Banaja was just like, who, like, he's trying to find the box of or whatever that is, and I don't know. Who cares?
I literally don't know why any faction or character in this show is doing any, you know.
Like, they all want this box thing, but we have no idea.
What is this show
about? They want the box, but they don't tell us what the box is. Like, that. Like, it feels like the end of Seven where, you know, Brad Pitt's yelling, "What's in the box?"
Like, this show actually is retroactively making IBO better because you know, a lot of the things I'm complaining about here, we leveled at IBO, but now I was like, oh, well, I guess I kind of didn't. I mean, they were trying to get to Earth. That's why I know what IBO was at, and here it's like, I can't even get that far.
Even it's even more central to that, like, Mikazuki was following Orga's lead to try to build a better life for themselves and become independent, basically, workers, not indentured servitudes and servants anymore, but, like, independent workers. It was like trying to be, they were trying to be like the Hokage of their universe or something, you know, or whatever, or to find, you know, the one piece of their independence or whatever you want to say it. There was some driving goal where you like, you could see what these child soldiers are trying to accomplish. They're trying to find their place in the world, trying to find independence. I could see what was driving force for these characters, but now I have no fucking clue what his deal is, what he's doing, why we care, what's happening at any point in time. I have no clue what's going on.
Okay,
and it's not because I'm confused, but just because it feels like the show's not selling these characters to me at all.
Right, okay. And I would say, too, that, like, yes, that's a problem with the show. I do believe that the show is designed so that Denazer is not supposed to have a purpose. I think that he's supposed to be just, like, caught in the mix of all this crazy stuff that's happening. But that doesn't make it entertaining to watch, and it doesn't make him a compelling protagonist.
No, because, I mean, even if you're caught in the middle of something, like, as a character, you're supposed to, you know, have something you want to do.
Well, all he apparently wants to do is go to Bone Zone with What's-Her-Face. That's as far as I can tell.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't? Have you seen her?
I mean, apparently she has a superpower that involves making every guy she touches want to go. Like, their entire purpose in life becomes, I must go to the Bone Zone.
I think it's her eyes. She has, like, some, like, fucking Gundam Sharingan or something. Like, her eyes just, like, pierce her soul or some shit.
That's how it works, like, yeah.
She's like, I'm a zombie, which means I'm magic. Shut the fuck up.
All right, I'm done talking about this show.
Yeah. So let's now we get on to talk about Naruto Shippuden.
Oh, yay, what an upgrade. Oh.
Naruto Shippuden, episode 151, Master and Student.
Here, I'll wake everybody up. Here you go.
Fucking bubbles!
Yeah, that's how it ended.
It's like, yeah. I think it's hilarious that they're doing this, you know, big emotional, think it to go off, and then he's like, oh, I'm dead, because I have to be.
That was a real FU to the filler writers, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, they knew they had to kill him off from the beginning, you know?
I guess, but it's just...
Well, like, give him a real going out. Like, I mean, Caesar got a true, you know, exit out of the story. This guy just, like, tripped over some rocks and broke his neck, I guess, and he's dead.
Like, that's there was right. a missile, and then he was under some rocks, and he's like, bubble, go!
What was the name of that woman, that girl that Zoro really respected, that was like a master swordswoman for her age, but then she died because she fell down some stairs. That's how this guy went out.
Yeah.
It was the most pathetic thing I've ever seen. Like,
That's what I meant.
Like, just got one
like
shot.
Literally, Utakata is Quina in Hotaru's backstory. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so funny that he, like, they spent, like, I don't know how many episodes, but, like, 3 or 4 episodes on this. And just, like, you know, making him this big character, and he's the main, you know, him and the Hotaru are the main characters, and it's just, like, at the, like, literal last 2 minutes of the episode, they're like, oh, you're dead. Bye.
Yeah, just, like, Pain shows up, he shots a missile. Like, we know most of Pain's powers at this point. They
like, did Pain
you know,
even need to bring all of his paths?
No, probably
like,
not.
Like, this guy shoots bubbles.
No.
If they wanted to make it a real fight, like, they could have done something interesting, because this was, like, all, like, additions to the manga. So even though they knew he had to die at the end, they could have done so many interesting things with this.
Give him a moment.
Half the episode where she's charging her, like, back laser or some shit, and it's like, why? Jesus Christ, do something new. Or, like,
this incredibly awesome forbidden jutsu. It totally annihilated everything in a 5-inch radius.
Yeah. I mean, they could have given him, like, at least a cool battle at the very end before he died, where he actually put up a bit of a fight, but he just dies, like, practically instantly. And then my favorite thing about the episode is that he's laying on the ground, and he's defeated. And what does he do? The very last thing he does, he blows some bubbles, and then he dies.
Well, he's not dead, because, you know,
like, he's effectively
he's dead.
Okay. But
he's not.
I mean, there's, like, I haven't watched beyond this, but I kind of still know some general highlights from Naruto that, you know, just, you know, cultural osmosis. And, like, I mean, do people care if I just start saying things?
Well, I guess Naruto? We do. Be careful. I mean, I wouldn't say anything.
Like, he's more or less dead, but he's
like Orochimaru or something, where he's not dead. Yeah, that doesn't matter. The point is that the last thing we see of him is that he's laying on the ground and then he's about to die, and so he blows bubbles because he's the bubble man.
But see, like, when Caesar did that, it was awesome. When he does this, it's fucking, who gives, it's like the weakest shit ever.
Well, it's the way he does it too. Caesar blows bubbles. Right. He doesn't blow bubbles with a little bubble blower that he keeps in his belt.
Well, I mean, it's also Caesar was getting JoJo, you know, the cure he needed. There was a definitive point to it.
But also, something else, like, disappointing was that this character, who didn't really get developed in the manga, so they had all the opportunity in the world to develop him here.
And they
didn't
do shit.
A flashback, the same flashback repeated every episode, where his master puts the beast in him. And then it turns in. It's the same flashback every fucking episode. That's all his development. It's like, come on, people.
They didn't do shit with him. They had a character where they basically had free reign. The only rules were he's got the tailed beast, and by the end of the arc, he's got to be captured or killed. That's literally the only rules they had going into it, dealing with this guy.
If it makes it seem like maybe they couldn't get a hold of Kishimoto and be like, hey, can we do this? And they, like, he wouldn't return their calls. And they're like, well, I guess we'll just, I don't know, just
or like
show the same thing we've seen.
You can't do anything cool rule because I might want to do that later.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's never stolen ideas from the filler before.
Yeah, didn't he incorporate some filler from Naruto the first season into, like, canon in the Shippuden? I remember hearing about some stuff like that.
It's not only that, but he literally takes a plot point from Shippuden filler and uses it at the very end of the series. Well, not the very end, like a year or two before the end. But he literally does that thing that everyone's like, that's bullshit. And then he does the bullshit.
Yay, Shippuden!
Yay, Shippuden! Hey, it's back to canon, so it'll be slightly more tolerable.
Oh yeah, if Naruto still doesn't know Jiraiya's dead. It's been like 500 episodes, right?
That's literally the title of the next episode. Naruto finds out Jiraiya's dead.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he finds out next episode.
Also, those filler villains just got taken out, and I think all of them just got punched into wood. Like, that's it.
Oh, even Ben 10.
Even it's Ben hilarious that this guy had... What the fuck was up with Ben 10? it seemed like they were building him up somehow, or something.
Was there a character in this filler named Ben 10?
Yes. It's Benton, like B-E-N-T-E-N. Oh,
but they don't say it that way. They say Ben 10.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, what the fuck?
That just flew through my head, my one ear and out the other, I guess. But
like, I remember that Sakura punched him into a house, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
That's the end of Ben 10.
I thought you talked about the Ben 10 reboot that's about to go on Cartoon Network next month or something, so I got confused, sorry.
Do you mean like the fifth reboot or some shit they've done of that?
Yeah, I don't know why they keep making that show. I mean, I guess it makes money, obviously, but that's the reason. Yeah. But they keep
reason why you keep rebooting it is because then you can just do whatever the fuck you want. Story-wise.
Yeah.
It's like everything has to be Teen Titans Go at this point because it's like, well, we have to be able to show any episode whenever the hell, so good luck with the recurring plot lines. Fuck you.
That Turtle show's getting the same treatment.
I lost track of that show. Like, that show, the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle show is actually pretty good, but there was a point where I just lost track of it and I have no idea what it's doing.
Apparently, it continued to be pretty good. But now they've decided that since they can't show any random episode at any random time, they need to make a new show that is going to just be Teen Titans Go, and they'll be able to do that. anyway.
Right, they really, yeah. I know the logic behind that, but that's something that just really annoys me about Western animation, because like being able to construct building narratives is like a fucking good thing. Even like Steven Universe has like random off episodes, but it's still able to build a narrative. And it's really annoying that so many shows, at least in the West, want to just avoid it altogether.
I mean, it is a good thing, but it's also bad for business. Because
double-edged sword.
Like, just straight up, people, networks love to make money off syndication, and that's tough when every episode is connected to one another, even tangentially. So they love it when it's just, we can literally just show the second episode of the show, the 55th episode of the show, the 312th episode of the show, and the 4th episode of the show in that order, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we understand why it does it. We don't have to like it, though.
Yeah.
Right. I understand why. It just, unfortunately, because it hampers a lot what a lot of shows can do narrative-wise.
Anyway, that'll do it for tonight, unless we want to talk about, Box Guy in standalone complex.
The Hick Box Guy.
Casa is too Casa.
It's the Texan Box Guy.
Oh, Ghost in Shell. Okay, all right. I got confused for a second.
Like Togusa was literally like they were like, you know, his wife and kids must really hate this asshole.
Like, how is he still even married? Like, he's a exactly. Box.
His wife must be like, this is over.
like, how do you even,
How do we even?
He's rich.
How do we even? I think we can just say it to like the lost scenarios.
Yeah.
Did anyone see the Zelda Honest trailer? Because when they do the starring section,
I haven't seen it. I saw it pop up on YouTube. I haven't actually watched it yet.
I love that. My favorite detail on that one is that they put in. You know how every single time I pick up a rock and a Korok under it, I drop the rock on its head and it's like, ugh! And they put that in and it's like, yes, they understand me. Anyway, that was episode 50 of Tsunami Gap Podcast. That was a fucking weird tangent.
Yeah, as the host of the show, you should not be doing so many tangents.
it's better.
Yeah,
this
was
way.
That you who brought in the reboot into this? That was really.
I know.
Really,
that was Tsunami related.
Okay, true.
And I had literally just seen it on Twitter.
Yeah.
That should have gone in the news section at the beginning, though, not.
But I didn't see it.
It was breaking news.
It was literally breaking news. I just
sometimes you just have to break into the broadcast with the news.
Anyway, we'll see you all next week. Thank you, Crocodile.
And no problem.
Thanks, C-Kohler.
No problem.
And B-Dubs.
Cool.
Oh, by the way, B-Dubs, today somebody said that B-Dubs stands for Buffalo Wild Wings. Is that true?
I have no idea.
Okay. Anyway, bye.
Later.